Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody. It is Wednesday, and welcome to another episode of the Talking Comics Podcast. I believe this is episode number 354. I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me this evening is Mr. Bob Ryer.
Aloha, you Aurora, you.
And Jessica Schaefer is also here.
Oh, you didn't do the voice. I was getting ready to do it. I was getting my deep voice on.
Hello. And Jessica is also here.
Hello there.
Now we can start.
Hello.
Yeah, now we can start. So it's, unfortunately, it's just the three of us. I put up this lovely tweet about how Bronwyn was going to be joining us, filling in for Joey, who is away taking care of some personal matters. He is moving, so on and so forth. And she was so psyched. She wrote a bunch of notes, read a bunch of books, and was going to help me talk about Fan Expo Canada that we went to over this weekend. And then, doom. like a time-released, incubating, probably con crud, just like activated in her system toward the latter end of her work day. She was walking up the to the front door, and I opened the front door for her, and I could just tell. I was like, oh, green. Nope, this ain't happening. So she's like putting away groceries, and what are you doing? She's like, oh, I just want to put some stuff away, and whoop, and almost. That didn't happen, but almost. So as the host and quote-unquote boss of the podcast, I have benched my wife for the evening.
Whoa.
If she's feeling much better, she's more than welcome to come downstairs and join us. I hope that she does. But everybody, she wanted to be here, and we would love to have had her. But she needs to rest because she has a big weekend coming up. And so she needs to get better. Anyway, we wish her well. And all of that jazz. I have already brought her tea, and I will work my magic.
What a mensch.
Will happen.
Yeah. Feel better, B. Yeah, she sent me a message, Steve, and she's like, do you think you could get sick from pecans? And I'm like, oh, no. That's never good. When someone sends you a text like that, you're like, yep, you're done.
Is it cyanide that smells like burnt almonds? She didn't have any of that, did she?
No.
Good.
No, see, but we've been like, so we're both trying to get healthy. Like, we've joined this brand new Y that opened up, and this thing is not like your local dumpy ass Y that, you know, you don't necessarily want to join, but this is like a brand new state-of-the-art friggin' like technodrome of Y's that we have down the road from us. And so I just signed us up for like a year membership, and they've got everything in there. They've got all kinds of pools and gym equipment and tracks that you can go on. I'm hoping for like some kind of rollerblading area. I don't know. Anyway,
hey, speaking of whys, I'm going to throw something out there so you can think about it.
Sure.
In one of the books I will be talking about later, Modern Fantasy number 3, mm-hmm. they go to the Y. Did you see what
they do go to?
Yep.
the
Y. YOWC. What do we think that stands for?
You gonna tell us?
No, I have no idea. I didn't.
Oh, you're generally asking.
I have yet to ask Kristen. I will ask her tomorrow. I will send her an email and try to figure out.
No idea.
We should tweet her right now and get an answer by the end of the show.
Okay. I'm thinking Young Occult Wizards Club, but who knows?
That's not bad.
That's close. I could think that could work. That's pretty good.
All right. What do you think it is, listeners?
Yes.
Y-O-W-C.
Tweet us your
answers.
Keep it clean.
Yeah. So this is going to be a very loose show, as you can tell. We're not necessarily going to do lightning rounds because it's only the three of us, and the timer just seems pointless to me. We do have a couple books for open discussion. We have some condolences to bestow as well. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about mine and Bronwyn's trip to Fan Expo.
Cool.
I really wish that she was here for this, but she's not. All right.
Can you talk about her side of the story and like her voice? Can you do that?
Yeah.
No, I can't do it in her voice. I'll do it in my voice.
Can you paint yourself green at least?
Please. No.
Oh.
She looked so good.
She did.
She looked awesome. It I came wore out. My that cosplay wig was great. For about 20 minutes. We'll get to that. Okay. So it had been a long week. All right. I want to start this story off really quick by thanking everybody for sending their well wishes and stuff. I had a procedure done earlier in the week, and while it is a very much a routine thing, when you have Crohn's disease, anything routine isn't really in your vocabulary. Like everything, every day is a gift with Crohn's disease, and you never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates. So I got really good news. I got probably the best news that I've ever gotten from one of these things. And it's pretty much that the new drug that I've been on for my Crohn's is gelling with my system. It's doing its thing. And like they didn't find anything.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's really encouraging. It's really cool. It was really freaking me out because I've never done anything like this outside of my Stony Brook Hospital on the island. And, you know, it's just they used a different kind of anesthesia that kind of messed me up for a couple of days afterwards.
Maple flavored?
No. No. Like, apparently I was awake but don't remember it because the stuff gives you amnesia. But I had, whole conversations with people, apparently.
Oh, that's weird.
And I don't remember them worth a damn.
Nope,
so
I don't like
anyway,
that's cool.
Bronwyn had a bunch of work stuff going on, so we were both exhausted, but we were really excited because we were going to Fan Expo Canada in Toronto, big comic book show that happens out this way, and so we didn't really jump on getting tickets. I've tried applying for press in the past, and they always just leave it to the last minute. You don't know if you got it or not, and I didn't want to do that this year. So we decided just to go the one day on Saturday. But to go into Toronto, do the whole thing, you kind of want to be there so you can start your day early. Mm-hmm. So we needed a place to stay. All the hotels were taken. Our good friend Brad was nice enough to find us an Airbnb in the Kingston area. And so we meet up at this bar. Ahead of time, we drive out there and we meet up at the bar. We're all hanging out, we're having fun, catching Pokemon, doing our thing. And I hear Brad mention to both Bronwyn and I was like, "Yo, how's the Airbnb?" He's like, "Well, on the ground floor is a fish market." And I'm like, "Okay." And he goes, "So it smells when you walk into that like that you know that stairs area." And my gears are already turning. I can already see where this is going.
Oh,
and he's
man.
Like, you know, once you get upstairs, like after a little bit, like it just goes away. It's not really that bad. It's not as powerful. And so me, a person who I don't eat fish. I have eaten fish in the past, but I do not make a habit of eating fish. One of the reasons is that I don't like the smell of it. It brings me to
a
bad place.
It's a hard smell to get used to. Okay.
So we get to this place and he turns the key and he opens the door and it's just like 1,000 fists of fishy fury assaulting my every orifice, just like bap, 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 bap. It's fish as far as the eye can see.
It's the home of Cthulhu you rented.
So I'm like, I'm going up the stairs and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, this has got to be some kind of like magical second floor that like the paneling underneath us must just be so amazing that it doesn't come through because I'll be damned. And we go into the Airbnb and it was very clean. It was very clean. It was very nice. It was spacious. Everybody fit. It was cool. But oh my god, oh my god, did it smell like you were sleeping right inside of the fish market. They lied. He lied. Brad lied to me.
He just misstated.
It was so terrible. It was so terrible. It was everywhere. And so for me, being somebody that, like, this is something that's really going to mess me up, because I don't sleep well in places that aren't my own. Like, it takes me a good day or two to settle in somewhere. So if I'm going for an overnight, I'm pretty much screwed. So couple the assaulting fish smell with the fact that we're pretty much right on top of a club that was open until 3:30 in the morning, with people right below us with music, subwoofers just woof, 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 woof. It was insane. So I got so desperate within the first like half hour of being there that I found a 24-hour Rexall pharmacy and got Vicks VapoRub.
Sure.
Because that will knock anything out. Yeah. Yep.
Everybody was walking around with Vicks VapoRub mustaches, just so that they would take in some of the vape smell. And oh god, it didn't work. It didn't.
What?
It worked for like a second, but all it did was smell like VapoRub and fish, and it was out of control. And I couldn't cope with it. Something inside of me had snapped. And so Bronwyn's doing my nails for my cosplay the next day, and she's painting my nails, and I'm not allowed to use my hands to do anything. So between being incapacitated, not being able to use my hands, this ridiculous fish smell, I look over and everybody's like passing around the Vicks VapoRub canister like it's cocaine, and just like sniffing on it, and you could hear somebody go, oh, that's the good stuff. And I just cracked. I started laughing and I couldn't stop. You might have been here the time when we were doing the podcast and I couldn't get the end of it right.
Oh yeah, we had to get it.
And I just lost my shit. So picture that, but to like times it by a billion. I was crying. I was in tears. I couldn't breathe, because every single time that I would start to calm down, I would think of another joke inside my head about the whole fish smell situation and crack myself up all over again. So I finally get my composure and I'm calming back down, and I hadn't heard it before, but all of a sudden one of those little like Glade Sensi sentries goes off, the things that shoot out the mist. And it was like, you hear this like, and it was old and the batteries were dying, right? So it's just like,
yeah,
it was so sad. And I thought to myself, I was like, oh buddy, you tried, I appreciate the effort, but oh god. And I tears out of my eyes, to the point where Bronwyn thought that I had actually had some kind of like an episode while laughing and had gone to a really dark place and was now crying at the horror of it all. And in between laughing, I just said, she's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I just go, my entire body is fish. And oh my god, I haven't laughed that hard in years. And it was amazing. So I got about 2 hours of sleep is the moral of that story.
But I know that smell, man. It's bad. It's very bad.
You know what it was?
Oh, it's fish smell. It smells like ass. Okay.
Because I love the smell of tilapia in the morning.
I held my fist to my face across one of my nostrils and like caked on the Vicks VapoRub with the other one. I have a very acute sense of smell. I always have. And it was my nightmare. It was my nightmare. But
you should have gone as a Cree and just covered yourself in blue vapor.
Regardless, I had a great time, and I am very thankful for the room, not because of the smell, but because of the laughs. It's really good to have one of those like lunatic episodes every now and again where you just can't stop laughing. And probably it's something that isn't even really that funny, but like, in my head, I think I'm hilarious. So while crying and laughing, I kept telling myself these different jokes, and I couldn't stop. It was just, it was so funny. So we finally made it to the con, and it was a really good time. We, I'm not going to lie, Bronwyn and I stuck to Hall F pretty much for the entire day. Hall F is where Artist Alley is. It's where all the signings are, the concessions, a couple of other meeting rooms and stuff like that that they might host stuff in, but I've never really seen anything major going on. A couple of vendors on that floor and everything, but the turnout for this year's show was like absolutely insane in terms of creators and who was going to be there. Like, I've gone to this show for the last couple of years, and they've never had a lineup like this as far as like comics heavy hitters and stuff like that, and some really amazing indie people as well, and other companies and different novel publishers and everything, fantasy novel publishers and such. And but yeah, like everybody was there. Like Scott Snyder was there, Greg Capullo was there, Jeff Lemire, Marguerite Bennett, Steve Orlando, James Tynan, Joshua Williamson, like everybody. Jai Lee, John Byrne was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Terry Moore and Robin were there as well. Sana Takeda and Marjorie Liu. Like, it was just Jen St. Ange. Like, it was just a powerhouse worth of a lineup. And I was like, I have no reason to leave this room. Like, I just want to keep on doing laps and seeing who's going to be at what table and when. And, you know, like, buy some books and have some nice conversations and stuff. So, so I wore my Lorraine from Atomic Blonde cosplay, got it all set up, and I got into the con. We made it all the way through, walked all the way there. We got to the main floor, and I realized that I'd forgot my wallet in the car. So I had to go all the way back. And the reason I forgot it was because I was carrying like a bag, like an over-the-shoulder bag, and I didn't have my jeans, and things weren't in its right place. And it was messing me up, man. And I had to get out. I had to get rid of it. So the Lorraine cosplay had to go because I had a kick-ass Hawkeye t-shirt in the car and some shorts and real pockets. And so that there was, I took all my stuff off. And I'm like, okay, that was fun for about 20 minutes. And now I got to go. But yeah, so we got back to the show. And Bronwyn looked amazing. She did her Jennifer Walters
She-Hulk
lawyer cosplay that everybody loves. Like, she gets so many compliments on it as we're walking around, and it's just awesome. Everybody took four people to do the makeup to put that together, and it was like a group effort. Not on my part. I was doing other stuff, but everybody else helped. And so... But it was incredible. We got to talk with Terry Moore and his wife, Robin. They are always a pleasure. We got to pick up an early copy of the trade for the new Strangers in Paradise, which was really nice. We saw some absolutely gorgeous pages from his collection. We wanted to buy one of them, but it was $1,500.
That's not awful. It's not awful at all.
But you're not. But... You're like, yeah, I'd love to buy this, and then you're like, nope.
I was thinking like $650.
Yeah, you'd probably do it for $657.
Yeah, and Robin was like, yeah, $1,500. I was like, okay, that's gonna have to be like a plan. Like, I'm gonna have to actually come here with the intent of buying, or just contact you online and see if maybe I can get it that way. But I found out that they hadn't been to Fan Expo in like 10 years. So, and they don't know when they're going to be back next. So it was kind of nice to, after so many times of chatting with them and hanging out with them and having their booth kind of be this island where I can go and recuperate. They'd never met Bronwyn, but they'd heard the story several times of us meeting at the con and being together and moving in and getting married and all of that. So Robin was like, I remember you now. And she started telling us all this stuff about our relationship. I was like, yep. So that was really special.
Yes, it is.
Bronwyn got to, well, we both did, but Bronwyn got to have a nice chat with Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. That was her kind of crowning moment of the con. That was her number one goal. They did not have anything to buy or for her to sign at that particular moment. Well, they had a stock saved for the next day, and this was just a signing booth or whatever. But Sana pulled out a business card, a monstrous business card, and it's gorgeous. It's like the most gorgeous business card we've ever seen. And she saw, so they both signed that, and immediately we came back the next day and we actually framed that, so that when you walk in, we have it in a nice like matted frame. Absolutely gorgeous. So that was super special. They are just two amazing ladies and really nice. We had a nice conversation with Jeff Lemire. I picked up the hardcover edition of Trillium, and you know, we talked to him for just a minute about some of the Comicsgate stuff that you all talked about last week, and you know, thanked him for his efforts and for his stance and for being, you know, a really solid voice against that nonsense. So I was a little hesitant to say something to him about it, but I don't know. He seemed to respond really well to it. It might even be the best response I've gotten from him in past times. I don't know. Super nice guy, though. Really, really appreciated seeing him again. I got to talk to Joshua Williamson. It's been 5 years since he's been on the show.
Probably, yeah.
We figured we're going to get him back on to talk about some stuff. I was having a nice chat with him while we were there. Another person that we got to kind of hang out with for a little bit and get some books is Marguerite Bennett was there, who is always lovely. And she had all of her stuff there, her Batwoman and Animosity. And something came over me and I bought it all.
Nice.
I bought it all. And between the con and now, I've read it all as well, including the stuff she didn't have on the table. I read the whole friggin' series, including the spin-offs and the other stuff. We'll talk about it in a little bit. It is good. I got the trade version of Milk Wars, so the collected version of Milk Wars, and talked to Steve Orlando for a couple of minutes. He signed my copy. It was very nice. We had a really nice conversation with Jen St. Ange, who was there representing herself and her art. I got a Nancy Drew print, and nice. Bronwyn picked up all the issues of Nancy Drew with signatures and all. And I also got my copy from Toronto Comics of As Good As Gold, which is edited by Stephanie Cook.
Mm-hmm.
So she was there, apparently saw us outside of the con, and I totally I did not see her, like, at all. So I had my dark ass glasses on, and like my peripheral vision is not great in those things, and she must have just blown right past me because I did not see her. We tried to figure out who was gonna be where and when, but it did not work out. But we promised to figure out something for later. But I heard she had a really good time, so that's awesome.
Yeah, she was doing a whole bunch of panels for Creative Resource that she's doing with that website that links up creators to projects and to each other, and very, very nice thing she's doing.
She is super active. She's going places. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So happy for her. I'm trying to think if there was anything.
Best cosplay else you saw? Not counting your.
The best cosplay that I saw was a dude who was lying on the floor, and he had a whole, like, a bunch of pieces of oak tag that was a rendition of a level from the video game Street Fighter 2, and it's Sagat's stage, and in his stage, there's this humongous statue in the background. So he made little cutouts of both Ryu and Sagat, and they're about to fight, and he's laying behind them as the statue, with, like, the whole level behind him and on the ground and everything, and I just died. I will probably make this photo our photo for the podcast because it's just too amazing. I saw a lot of cool stuff, but surprisingly, we were there for one day, but I didn't necessarily see anything that really blew my mind with the exception of this creative Street Fighter 2 stuff. A lot of people looked great. Don't get me wrong. There were plenty of gorgeous and talented people walking around, but I've seen things at this show before that I just, like, I had to stop and take out my phone and be like, oh my god, this is so cool. And I guess I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like, the Hall F is not probably a big cosplay traffic area, you know? So that's I'm sure that that's what it was, because Saturday, I believe, is the cosplay contest. So there were definitely,
they're saving
it. You know,
they're saving all their good stuff.
Yeah, I saw a couple of, like, cool, like, Overwatch ones, but, like, I've seen the same cosplay turned up to 11, you know? Yeah. So, anyway, I should not have been on your cosplay judging panel. I'm a little harsh. I'm just kidding. Let me think. What else? I think that might be it. I should probably shut up, and we should talk about some comics. All right. If I think of anything else, I'll just start porting it out.
Sure.
I'm trying to think if we talked to anybody else. I don't think so.
Did Marguerite have her usual candy bowl?
No.
What?
No.
Hmm.
But she did say something to me, which I thought was kind of cool, because we've been fans of hers for a very long time, number of years now. And, you know, you always wonder, which series is this creator's favorite? And she told both Bronwyn and I that it's Animosity, like, all the way, that it's her baby.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think, that doesn't really surprise me that she would say that, because that's, like, hers, you know, like, that's, like, her thing.
Yeah, we going to talk about that series in a little bit, because I'm in love with it. It's really, really, really good. All right. I would like for somebody else to talk. So I'm sure that's what the listeners are thinking about. Like, come on, man. Let's have Bob pick up the talking stick. And why don't you tell us about the books you read this week, Bob?
Okay. Well, first thing will be a series that is the subject of the next Lays of Valhalla podcast, and that is the fabulous Ms. Marvel by G. Willow Wilson. We've got issue 33 out this week, which has art by Nico Leon, Ian Herring, letters, of course, by Joe Caramagna. And story-wise, it's part two of the story called The Ratio that's trying to bring Bruno and Kamala, trying to repair their relationship as well as Kamala's powers, which had kind of gone wonky when Bruno tried to test them. It's one of those, you know, Schrodinger's cat thing. It's what's in the box kind of deal. You should leave her powers alone, because now they're a mess. And they better hurry and fix it, because the Shocker has moved into Jersey City. And Kamala, at 2 inches tall, just doesn't quite meet his super villain standards for battle. So it's going to get to be a problem. Beautifully done by all concerned. Tons of good humor, more messages in Western Union. And the most amazing reference to the board game Mousetrap I've ever seen.
Oh!
Anybody read Ms. Marvel?
No. I'm not up to that.
I
started from the beginning again to, like, reread everything. So I'm like a couple behind.
I did not get to read it.
It is so great. Beginning to end is just, and the person who does it's so appreciative when you say something to her. I caught her at Escape Pod a couple of months back, and wow, just lovely, lovely lady.
Okay, Bob, what else you got?
I have a double feature, Batgirl number 26 and Batgirl Annual number 2, both by the new series writer Magreed Scott. Issue 26 is art by Scott Pelletier, and that picks up right after the sort of pre-credit sequence that was in the oversized anniversary issue, with Barbara in pursuit of Grotesque, who is this murderous art thief, who actually gets the upper hand on Barbara, if only for a moment, but that moment might be just enough to put her out of commission forever. For what it's worth, and this is some big things I'm going to say here, I really felt like Ms. Scott had sort of found a combination of the Batgirl of Burnside and what Gail Simone was doing. And that's saying a lot. I really... huge fan of what Gail did with Barbara, both the Certainly in the Birds, and then what she tried to make sure that when they went to the New 52 that people would do it properly, so she took it on. And right now, this book, which has not been bad in the months since we went Rebirth and even into Burnside, this is a first chapter is just really great, and the stellar work in the annual, which I don't want to say too much, it brings back a character from Gail's run in a really, really creepy, nasty way, and I don't want to spoil anything at all you should read, and that's with art by, Elena Casagrande and Jordi Belair, so really moody sort of stuff. So love where this series is headed based on the couple issues read so far, and I think we're in for some good stuff. And there is, of course, a costume redesign coming.
Oh, isn't there always?
Yeah, they've got some stuff in here, and it's okay.
I don't like when you say that. It's not okay.
Tell us how you really
feel,
Bob.
When you say it's okay, it's not really okay.
We're back to a bat suit. Instead of the jacket and Doc Martens and whatever. So we're back to a suit. So a lot of her hair out and whatever. It may grow on me. It may look better in action than it does as a static shot.
Okay.
Also, since I was speaking of Ms. Gail Simone, and let me just add that this might be the craziest thing she's ever written, which certainly says a lot, because this week saw the release of Catwoman, Tweety and Sylvester crossover.
Yep.
It is amazing. I mean, you're probably asking yourself, how does this crossing come about? Well, a witch's conclave and a bet. That would be the short version. And one, though, that as Sylvester says, threatens the entire fate of the universe. you have to do it. Our visitors from another strange planet find themselves paired off rather adroitly, Sylvester with Selena and Tweety with the Black Canary, and with the witches, which include Zatanna and most importantly, June Foray's Witch Hazel from the Looney Tunes. So now she's part of DC continuity, I guess. So this is great. They're egging them on, so the battle between birds and cats is just joint. tons of guest stars, all of them cat or bird themed, with antics that Chuck Jones would smile at. The book is an absolute delight. There's a second story by Shea Fontana with more animated-looking characters. The art, by the way, on the main story is Inaki Miranda, and that is just sensational. Did you get to read this, Steve?
I did. I thought it was great. I flipped out when I got to the page and I recognized Witch Hazel right away. Immediately, I was like, no way! Yeah. I love that character from the old Looney Tunes cartoons so much. Yeah, I thought this was fantastic. I laughed my ass off. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but I didn't expect for the voices of the characters to be so accurate. Like, this is some painstaking translation from, like, getting all the THs and all the stutterings in there. It's awesome. And the cameos, I'm not going to spoil any of them, but the people that show up, it's just, of course. So good. And I learned something about one of my favorite comic book characters that I did not know before. But I'm not going to spoil that either because it's a guest thing. Anyway, yeah. I read the Daffy Duck and Joker one as well. I think this one, I preferred the Tweety and Sylvester story. The other one was decent too.
Yeah, and wasn't there Porky Pig Luther as well?
Yeah, there was a Porky Pig Luther. There was the Daffy one. I'll just talk about it super quick. It was fun, and making the characters, writing the characters the way they sound on screen, the translation again blew my mind. But the story is basically just Daffy looking to get a refund from the Acme company, and so he takes a midnight bus there, falls asleep, and wakes up in Gotham, and the Joker and his gang, his goons, are up in the Acme thing, and he says that he's, like, from the Acme goon company, goon squad, and he's there to, like, whip Joker's people into shape, and goes on to becomes Joker's favorite henchman.
What?
And
that's hilarious.
At some point realizes just how psychopathic he is, and then he needs to take the Joker down and not let him go through with the crime. The more I talk about it, the more I actually think that it was really entertaining. All right, so they were both good. And the art was fantastic. I love these renditions of these characters, these kind of like more realistic approaches to the old school characters. Yeah. And it's really cool that they have these backups in the back of the book that they show you the original art so you can see where it came from. And yeah, it's really neat. I like that they're starting to do these with like a kind of like an annual thing, because there was another run of these as well.
Yes. And they did the Hanna-Barbera ones too at some point, yeah. Right? With Cross,
yeah,
with Johnny
I
Quest.
Read that
and
Snagglepuss one before we get to our end of the year stuff. I definitely got to check that out.
Exit. Stage left.
Stage right. Oh my God. I saw the opening credits for Heathcliff yesterday.
Heathcliff, and the Great Dane Heathcliff?
Oh my God.
Hold on a minute. Maybe you can explain something to me. Actually, you know what? No, maybe I think I'm one of his friends. Anyway, there's another cat in the Heathcliff opening that I was like, is that like Bad Boy Heathcliff? Or is that actually one of his friends? There's one that wears like a blue hat and a tie. And his female companion looks like she's wearing leg warmers.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I've you seen Heathcliff since I was a kid. Like, I even forgot until you just said that. I was like, Heathcliff? Like, oh, God.
Yeah, well, Heathcliff.
Bro, I'm thinking Marmaduke. I'm sorry.
Nah, you got Heathcliff. He's got, like, the big guy as his friend, and the other one that's got the roller skates on and the goggles all the time, and then the other one that's kind of just, like, stoned.
That sounds more like Fat Albert.
Look, when I watched that yesterday, I saw all kinds of context that I was not aware of watching it as a child. There is definitely some stereotyping going on in those characters. Hardcore. Heathcliff might have been a little bit ahead of its time, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, comic books.
Yeah.
About them. Bob, what else? Do you have anything else?
Yes, I do, and it will lead into something else, as a matter of fact. So as long as we're going down this road, or do you want to wait for that?
No, go for it.
Okay. Because since we were talking about Putty Tats, I dove into the archives and reread The Cat Number One by Linda Feit and the legendary Marie Severin from 1972. This series, which only lasted four issues, was part of an interesting, if short-lived, initiative by Marvel of a launch of three female-fronted and created, curated books. The other two were Shanna the She-Devil and the original Night Nurse. This is an origin story, and it features Greer Nelson, who's the recent widow of a policeman, who goes to work as a lab assistant to her college physics professor, a Dr. Joanne Tumalo. And because it's comics, Dr. Tumalo's experiments to enable any woman to totally fulfill her physical and mental potential despite the handicaps that society places upon her. They were really going for it. I mean, it's a little heavy-handed, but you know what? It's 1972, and it's well worth that they tried to do this. Now, because it also is comics, things don't go as planned, but Greer does acquire powers that allow her to help Dr. Tumalo avoid other people fouling up her experiments. Sorry for that spoiler. Eventually, Greer Nelson would become Tigra the Werewoman in Giant Size Creatures Number 1, just a little bit later in that year. And the suit that she wore as the cat is the one that Patsy Walker wears.
Ooh.
Hmm. Yep, it's exactly the same one. It's that issue of Avengers 144, whatever, where they're in the Roxxon warehouse and she wants to help. Patsy Walker, the model from years ago, always wanted to hang around with superheroes. Now she's with the Avengers for whatever reason. And they find this costume in a box. And she puts it on. It does help her a little bit. And so she's Patsy. So it's all sort of connected. Now, I bring that up because Marie Severin passed this week at age 89, who was one of the absolute giants in the industry going back into the 1940s. She, in her time at Marvel a little later on, would be the only female artist on staff. Things have certainly changed. The time she was on at Marvel, Ramona Fraiden was the only female artist over at DC. Her career actually began. She had been working on Wall Street and she'd gone to art school. Her brother John was working over at EC Comics doing war books and horror, and he mentioned to Harvey Kurtzman, who was one of the big editors over there, hey, my sister's a really great colorist. Why don't you have her come aboard? So her first issue was for a book called A Moon, A Girl Romance, which would eventually become Moon Girl, and then Moon Girl Fights Crime, and then become Tales from the Crypt, I think it was. what is back then, you had to pay for a mailing certificate, a postal certificate, which was, I don't know, $30. So Bill Gaines just kept changing the title of books and save money. She would stay with EC as colorist for all those great horror books, Tales from the Crypt, The Haunt of Fear, so on and so forth, as well as inking, lettering, penciling, everything else. When the comics market fell apart, she went briefly to what was Timely Comics, and then it completely bottomed out, and she left to work for the Federal Reserve Bank. And the way she describes is one day in 1964, tired of what she felt was a dopey job, she wandered over to see Stan over at Marvel, and he hired her on the spot. I got so much stuff for you to do. She would eventually take over penciling on Doctor Strange. And I sent a picture around to my co-host here. She did some amazing work over there. She did the Hulk and the Submariner. Most importantly, she did their humor book, not Brand X, because her talent for caricature, she could draw real people's faces perfectly. So if they're going to do movie and TV, and not Brand X was a comic and movie spoofy sort of book, and yep. She did.
I remember you talking about that.
She did some amazing work there that, to me, really cements her place in comic history for me anyway. And her favorite in that run, she did The Origin of Superman. You can imagine who he is. and it's a book filled with every stupid super character that ever found its way into the book. Cats and snails and you name it. They all just show up, and he's finally, stop it, get out of here. She was in all 13 issues of that. She'd stay at Marvel into the 80s. She designed Spider-Woman's costume, co-created that. She was assistant art director. She's an Eisner Hall of Famer. And I think it's this Stan quote that says it all about Marie. Calling Marie the best woman artist in the business is an injustice. Marie was one of the best artists in the business, period. So, excelsior and amen to that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bob.
My Lovely. Pleasure.
All righty. Jessica.
Steve.
Hey.
What's up, bud? What's happening?
Did you read anything over the past couple days?
Is that your me impression?
I don't know what that is.
Did we break into Get Shorty?
Very,
or?
Very, like, slightly strange Russia.
We're going to the flea market to look for some jewelry. Okay?
Listen. Love the right, flea markets, but you gotta get bagels with some shmia first, okay?
Yes. I can't believe they got rid of the roller rink. Okay.
All right. Anyway, stop.
Let's go. Serious faces now.
Stop.
Grown ups.
So yeah, I read things. I read a bunch of things. I don't know. I read all sorts of things. I did my homework. I was assigned homework the last time I was here. Don't forget.
Yes. Tell me what's going on.
I read, you know, 1 through 5. I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it.
1 through 5 of what?
Of Venom.
Okay. I just want to make sure people heard that.
Wrong book. Did I not read the right? Write it to the wrong.
I don't think you said it at all. I couldn't tell.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no. I read 1 through 5 of Venom, and it was great. I enjoyed it. There was, you know, a symbiote dragon in it, so I'm cool with that. No, the writing was really good. The art in it is just, like, really fantastic.
Isn't it amazing?
You know, yeah, and Donny Cates' writing is just, I mean, the whole thing was, it's really good. Like, I'm not, don't kill me. Like, I'm not a huge Venom fan. Like, I've read other stuff, and I was just kind of like, eh, you know, but this was really good. Like, I will read the next one. I will read the rest of the series as long as the write continues. As long as the art stays this way and the writing stays that way, I'm good. I'm down. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
It's really engaging. Like, it keeps getting better with every issue.
Yeah, I read them like that. I didn't put it down. Like, I read them back to back. Like, I was just like, read. Like, you know, I was just like, yes.
It's kind of like, it kind of has... Okay, now this is going to be a little bit of a bold statement, and it just came to my mind, so don't hold me to this. But in the way that kind of Jason Aaron's Thor, the God of Thunder, when that run came about, you got, like, from the, even from the very first couple of issues, you got this really, like, epic sense of scope of taking the character to places that it hadn't been before, or at least not in a very long time. And for me, for the Venom book, is that what, that's what it feels like. It feels like the Venom equivalent of that epic Thor-ness. Like, this could possibly be, like, one of the great Venom arcs.
No,
I don't know.
I agree. No, I agree with that, because it made, like, it, like you said, it's very engaging right away. The I don't know if it's, there's something different about the way him and, you know, his other, well, his other, communicate to one another. I don't know what it is. I don't know if I could put my finger on it specifically, but it really does engage you. And you're kind of like, what the heck? For a while, you're like, what's going on? Why do they have red swirlies? Why is he being, why is he trying to separate? What's happening? Why is this happening? Mm-hmm. Why is there a dragon in the sky? Like, it's very like, you're like, what is going on? Like, you're like, I'm almost like skipping pages because I want to know what's going to happen next. So, and that's
that last page of that first issue when you see that dragon for the first time, spoilers, it's just awesome, because really I was like, holy crap, where is this going? Like, he rewrites the whole origin, I think, in issue number 4. Like, he totally just changes it, what it is, and gives this ridiculously cool backstory for the symbiote and this kind of benevolent source creature.
Like, yeah, villain that's got them in like a hive mind, like locked up in a jail. Like,
So he's not a costume anymore.
No. It's really good. Like, if you're on the fence with reading it, I really, we both give it our thumbs up.
And that's coming from, like I said, I am not like a huge, like, oh my God, Venom. That's not, I've never really liked it. So, you know, but I did my homework, and I'm glad you gave me the homework. It was wonderful. It was really a good read. It was really, really a good read. And I can't wait to read more of it. Like, but now I'm afraid, like, I don't know if I want to do, like, should I wait for another 5? Because I really enjoyed reading it all together, to be honest with you.
It's a really good issue to issue. Okay. Like, I don't say that about a lot of things. There's enough, like, each one of those issues is really meaty.
Dense.
You know, you feel like you watched a whole episode of Game of Thrones as opposed to, like, you know, I don't know, a 22-minute commercial-free something or other.
Yeah. No, it's dense. It's very dense, but it's not, like, wordy dense. It's just, like,
no,
it's good. It's really good. I really enjoyed it, to be honest.
All right, cool.
I enjoyed it way more than I thought I was going to. I'll put it that way.
I wouldn't lie to you.
No, you don't. You don't lie to me, Steve. You don't lie to me.
If anything, I tell the truth way too much.
Yeah.
Sometimes
we just need to shut up. But we don't. We're going to just keep talking.
All right. What else do you got for us?
Well, speaking of sometimes I need to shut up, let's talk about, I read Rick and Morty number 1, the Dungeons and Dragons Rick and Morty issue. Okay. Now, I saw this on the shelf and I wasn't originally, but I was like, how do I not pick that up? Like, I'm going to pick it up. Like, you know, I'm going to grab that. Yeah. And I read through it. Okay. Let me just pop to my notes. I have them written out, like, you know, in lightning round format.
This is where you're going with this. This is great.
So it starts off, and Rick and Morty, it's pretty much what you expect. Morty, while going to school, he overhears some girls talking, and they're talking about their experience playing Dungeons and Dragons, and more that he hears about how much they like the dudes that are playing Dungeons and Dragons. So that's what it is. They go into this whole thing of, like, Morty thinks that this will finally get him laid, and they literally say that in the book, this will get him laid. So he goes to the local gaming comic store and try to pick up some more information, and he meets a cute chick there who invites, you know, and he lies and he says that he's like, oh yeah, I'm an OG dungeon master, you know, like all this BS, and of course he's lying. So then he runs to Rick for help, who he thinks is going to make fun of him, but it turns out that Rick is actually an OG dungeon master. And he's been playing for years. What a twist. So behind Rick's box of time travel stuff is actually Rick's D&D stuff. He breaks it open. He starts to show Morty how to play the game with his group. One of the guys strangely looks like George R.R. Martin. They don't call him that, but I mean, it is. It's like a character. Yeah. It's got to be. Mm-hmm. It looks just like him. It's ridiculous. You know, so they go on this thing. He still doesn't understand. He still doesn't get it. Then they go to Blitz and Chips, and they hack into Roy and go on, like, a dungeon crawl in Roy. Okay.
Can I just tell you something real quick?
Sure.
I've never seen a single episode of Rick and Morty.
So Roy is like a video game where you get to like live a person's life. If anyone who's listening that's watched a show, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So they hack into like another video game and like it's like a VR reality game, you know? So, but this is the thing for me, okay, is that they leave it off in a little cliffhanger. I don't want to spoil it for anyone that actually wants to read it, but there's so many ways they could have went with this, and I did enjoy it, but, you know, it kind of saddened me that the whole premise of the story was Morty needed to learn how to play D&D, not because the game was cool or was fun to do, because it was going to get him laid. Yeah. You know, like, personally, I thought D&D worked the other way around, but I guess times have changed, you know, I guess things are different, and don't get me wrong, it was a fun read, and I'll probably pick up the next issue, but, like, and I understand, like, in the show, Morty's character does a lot of things to get, like, in the favor of a girl named Jessica at school, so it isn't his character, but I don't know, like, you know, he's got portal guns, he can go to any universe he wants, multiple universes, like, they could have had so much fun with it, and they really didn't. Maybe a little sad. Yeah.
Agreed.
Sad.
All right, Bob, you go first and then I'll go.
No, that's a bit of coarseness that it sounds like everything else could have done without.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I sort of groaned a little inside when you said that.
Yeah, you know. Like, yeah.
I have questions.
Sure.
Ah!
Maybe okay. I have answers.
Did you expect a Rick and Morty comic to actually walk that line and do the right thing?
You know what? Actually, I did, because the show's not really like that, though, Steve. Like, that's why I'm a little more disappointed. Like, he does do things to, like, because he's, like, crushing over Jessica, but they don't really say, like, oh, I'm going to sleep with Jessica, or it's going to get me laid, or that's what's going to happen. They don't actually say that in the show. That's why I found this really, like, weird. Okay. Like, it's just to go on a date, and, like, that I get, and that's, like, kind of cheeky fun, and he does a lot of stuff to be, like, cool, and there's, like, one episode with a sex robot, like, but it's never really, like, you know, I don't know. It's never that.
Glaze over that one.
Yeah, no, that's long. There's Zorps. It's a thing. I've watched the whole show, and I actually quite like it. Like, when you really watch it, it's very, there's a lot more behind the surface of that show.
Oh, I've heard that. I'm sure that there is. Yeah. I am coming from a place of almost complete and total ignorance. Yeah. So, go ahead.
And I was just surprised because, like, this is fully licensed by Dungeons & Dragons as well. You know, it's not like they just decided. This is like a fully licensed thing. So it's not like they just decide. No, it is Dungeons & Dragons Rick and Morty number one. Like, it uses all, like, it shows a lot of the original book, you know, all that type of stuff. So that's why I was kind of surprised that they made it, like, you know, a kind of trivial thing. Like, I'm going to play this so I can get laid, you know? I was just, I don't know. It just, and it could have been really
fun.
The
campaign thickens.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to shut up now. Remember when we said we should shut up? I'm going to shut up.
Oh, that sucks.
You know, but it was, like, that's the thing. Because the rest of the book was fun, like, him going, you know, once they start to go on the dungeon crawl and once they're, like, in the game and, like, some stuff happens at the end, it's fun. So it just saddens me that they kind of, like, went that way. Like, why?
It's always a shame. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's always a shame when something that you're really into kind of takes a left turn at something that could potentially, you don't have to say anything at all, but you chose to make, you know, this part of the joke, and it rubs you the wrong way. And when it's something that you really like, it's the disappointment's a little bit more rocky, as it were.
Anyway, moving on. I have more.
All right.
Okay, to a book that I really liked. Here we go. I read Beyonders number one.
I want to hear about this one.
Did anyone else pick this up? Did you pick this up, Steve? Anybody?
I did not pick this up, but I saw the cover of it last night, and I'm waiting to hear. I actually wrote down words that I believe are going to come out of my mouth about this book in the next couple of minutes.
Did you write down Corgi with an eye patch?
Yes! Yes!
Because there is a Corgi with an eye patch on the cover of this book, along with, like, some Illuminati symbols, and they're like in a tube.
I have written down here right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I called this last night.
Of course you did.
Go ahead.
Like, you should know me by now.
I do know you by now. That's why I was able to do this. Go ahead.
So, cue the music from the X-Files. Because that's where we're going. That's where we're going with this book. We meet our protagonist, Jacob Tate, a young man just about to finish high school. He's obsessed with three C's: cryptography, conspiracies, and corgis. Specifically his one-eyed corgi named Shadwell, who is also flatulent. and he's a farting corgi that wears an eye patch.
Is that how he lost his eye? Yeah. Just farting way too hard.
Well,
Montana just rocking.
There might be other reasons. Jacob's life pretty much is about to be turned upside down from exploding aunts and uncles, crazy online video chats, and the corgi is actually his guardian who leads him to safety. Ooh, things go crazy. He finds out that maybe his hobbies are the real deal. The best part about this book, and I don't think if you don't read the back matter, you'd miss it. There is a actual like treasure hunt and like a whole, you have to use a cipher to figure out, there's on each panel, there's a symbol and a letter. And throughout each issue, there will be words that you have to figure out. And at the very end, you have to email them to Aftershock. And the first 100 people to email them will actually get a real prize.
That's awesome.
So there's like a little like game within the book to go.
That's
on.
Really
and like,
cool.
That's what the whole book's about. It's all about like ciphering and codes and you know, you're going like, you know, that kind of Illuminati. There's like a big eye on the cover with a triangle, you know, so it's like that type of deal. And I'm like a closeted conspiracy freak person. Okay.
Is that your preferred nomenclature?
Yeah, I don't
conspiracy freak person. Thank you.
People always are like, oh yeah, I'm not like, I don't believe the earth is flat. I don't really think the Illuminati's there, but I like to listen to it. I really love like ARG games on the internet, like the stuff I loved, like all the Slenderman stuff that came out like years ago, where you had to like find different clues like from different things they posted on the internet.
Did you believe in the Blair Witch?
No. But I enjoy that kind of weird, you know, like immersive thing. So I always like cipher codes and stuff like that. So I'm super excited to figure it out. I hope I'm going to continue to do this. Yes. I'm figuring out the code each week. But that's why. And it has a little bit of history in it. Uses a little bit of everything. Bob, I'm like I said, I was really surprised that you didn't pick this up because it seems
sounds like I should be. Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like a you kind of book. And there's a corgi with an eye patch on the cover. So win-win.
Absolutely.
We should all come back in 2 weeks and give our deciphered codes.
That'd be hilarious. That'd be really good. We should.
But you should probably figure it out before then and enter that contest.
Yes.
I know. Well, it's going to be, you have to read all, it's going to be through all the issues. So you're going to have to read that, which is really smart.
Oh, it is so on.
That is such smart marketing. I love good marketing like that too. It's fun and it's good because you're getting people to buy that book because I'm going to buy this book now. Whether I like it or not, I'm figuring
out
that
buy this
code.
Book now.
I know,
that's
like
genius.
I'm figuring out this code. It was genius. It's really good. Yeah, no.
You know what it's gonna be? It's gonna tell us all to drink more Ovaltine.
Yes, exactly right.
Oh God, I would love that. I would love if it said that. But yeah,
be sure to drink your Ovaltine. What is this?
It's a commercial.
Yeah.
No, and other than that, like the book's great itself. Like the writing's very good. The art in it's great. You know, it was definitely. You know, I heard some negative stuff about it too. People don't like it. They were like, oh, it's not serious enough. I'm like, it's like kind of YA. It's not like, you know, if you're looking for like gritty, like, you know, they're coming for you and we're running. That's not really what it is, but it's definitely pretty cool. Definitely enjoyed.
Nothing wrong with some YA.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy. I love me some YA too. So is it for young kids? I'm in there.
My favorite graphic novel of the year is a YA book and has not changed since it came out. So more on that later, a couple months. All right. Do you have anything else?
I have one more. That's just quick because, you know, I talked about I am still on my epic journey through the World of Warcraft right now. Dungeons, all the end raid game content open today. After I get out of this podcast with you, I will be raiding my little heart out because like all the end game content released, they put in a big patch. Tuesday is patch day. But to enjoy patch day without playing the game, because you can't play the game while they do this, I walked
on Tuesday we get patches.
On Tuesday we get patches. I walked into the comic book store on the other day, and on the shelf were books 1 and 2 of like the collected comics that came out 10 years ago. They're from 2009 and 2008, and they were really good. It just goes through, like, it's more on the Alliance side, and I have to say, I will always be for the Horde. Loktar O'Gard, don't care, okay? We burned a tree down, deal with it. Anyway, moving on. they were great. These comics were really good. So I was just really super stoked to be able to find these hardcover, like they're the hardcover collector's edition. There are 2 other books that he didn't have, which I was like, well, if you ordered these 2, why don't you order the other ones? I don't know. I asked him. They're probably, they'll be in my bag next week, probably. Because yes. I complain and things just magically appear. But yeah, no, they follow the story of who used to be the king of the Alliance. He is now dead. The only problem with these is that they like kind of retcon some stuff. They went back in time. They did like some crazy stuff. So some of it doesn't work. But if you just read it as its own, like it's a great story on its own. Like you really don't even have to know the game to read these. It's just really good fantasy. Like you don't have to know anything about it. You don't have to have ever played a single Warcraft game to be able to sit down and read any of these. And I have customers at the store that actually read all the books and read the comic books, but have never played the game and enjoy them. So yeah, no, just super stoked to see them on the shelf while I was still, you know, battling my way through Azeroth. I was having a good time.
Ah. what level is your character?
Oh, I'm max level. It's 120. Yeah, no, that happened within a couple. Listen, I had friends that were there that night. They stayed up. Like they take off. I have friends that take off from their jobs. Okay. to level and to be raid ready. Now I don't get it because the raids came out today and I'm just as ready as they are, but you know, to each his own.
Well, I'll be doing that when a new Diablo game drops. Yeah,
you,
for like, sure.
You enjoy it. So yeah.
Oh, yo, I have to show you, try to remind me, I have a video of me and my friend Brendan waiting for the midnight release for Diablo 3. And we hadn't slept in about 2 days.
I've done that too. I understand those.
And I'll see if I can find it. It's hysterical. We're both so tired. We had a friend drive us to the midnight thing, by the way. It was just so good. Yeah, there are several Diablo games in the works.
I know. There's a lot of stuff going on right now for that.
Yeah.
Playing on Switch
book
now?
Series, the Switch version. I saw the Switch version at Fan Expo.
Oh, did you get to play it? Did you like get to touch it?
I did not because the line was pretty long, and I don't necessarily like the idea of touching the Switch after a bunch of other people have
bring handy wipes,
sweated and hammed all over it. I don't know.
I bring handy wipes because I can touch everything because I won't even touch the door to the bathroom. I have like wipes in my bag. I'm one of those weirdos wiping down the door.
No, I use a lot of hand sanitizer at cons. I've gotten sick from some cons. I used to have an incredible immunity to them. I went to a whole bunch in a row and nothing happened. And then 1 year, oh my God, I thought I was going to die. And it's not, you know what it is. It's not just one thing that you get from con crud. It's just this soup, like this virus soup that goes through your veins.
Mashup of everything.
Yeah. It incapacitates you, turns your ass into a faucet. It's terrible. Anyway, so
did you just say it turns your ass into a faucet on the
Everybody on knows. T-shirt.
Yeah.
Hey, we're all human here. Everybody's had a bad day in the bathroom. Am I right?
It's the new advertising line for X-Lax. Turn your ass into a faucet.
There are new sponsors.
Yeah.
I'm like crying right now from that.
It's
one.
All
that
just
one
a clever ad campaign orchestrated by me. Okay. Is that all you've got, Jess?
Yeah, I think so. You broke me. You broke me with the ass faucet.
You like the ass faucet? Not a lot of people do, apparently.
Anyway.
Meet new people every day. All right.
Yeah, so good. So, go ahead. Talk about your books, Steve. Talk about them.
I'm just going to say right off the top, I don't want to talk about it too much because practically the entire issue is spoilers. But if you're at all a Runaways fan and you're not reading the new series, you need to get on it. Number 12 was the best issue of the reboot so far. So incredibly satisfying. So many cool arcs kind of coming to a head. Relationships being recognized and celebrated, and just a really beautiful end to the latest arc, and I cannot wait to see what they're doing with that book going forward. Anka's artwork was just spectacular. It might be the best thing I've ever seen him do. And Rainbow Raul is just, she's killing it. She's killing it on that title. I absolutely, as a big Runaways fan from back in the day, it's perfect. I love that it's staying low to the ground in terms of stakes and villains and is really, really focusing on the aftermath of the characters and them coming to grips with who they are to each other now, whether or not they're still a team, that sort of thing. Like, 'cause there was so many unanswered questions from when that series took a dive and we didn't get any more of it. And this is filling in all the gaps and giving you a whole lot more, and it's just fantastic. So, Runaways number 12, spectacular. My main event is my read-through of Animosity.
Ooh.
So, like I said, I picked up all the things from Marguerite at the show. She signed them, and she put a cute little paw print at the bottom of each signature.
Aww.
A little heart, and I almost died. Ah, so cute. Anyway, so I picked up volumes 1 through 3 of Animosity, and then I picked up volume 1 of Evolution, which is a spin-off series based on Animosity. So, in my journey, I read Animosity 1 through 15. I also read Animosity The Rise, which is another spin-off, 1 through 3. And I also read Animosity Evolution 1 through 7. So I bought digital issues to fill in the gaps, and I read all the trades that she sold me, and I just fell right into this. So Animosity proper is written by Marguerite Bennett, art by Raphael De La Torre, colors by Matthew Schwager, and letters by Marshall Dillon. All right, I wrote out a whole thing for this, and damn it, I know we're not doing lightning rounds, but I'm going to read it.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Okay. One day, for no reason, the animals woke up. They started thinking. They started talking. They started getting revenge. Anyway, Animosity tells the story of Jessie, a young girl who is forced to navigate life after The Wake, a worldwide phenomenon of an apocalyptic nature that grants animals the ability to speak and therefore organize against the human race that has treated them and the planet so poorly since the dawn of time. Throughout the 15 issues of the series, Jessie travels alongside her bloodhound protector Sandor, the man-bun-wearing friend to all animals Kyle, as well as a rotating cast of animal companions while en route to California, where her estranged brother Adam presumably awaits. More on that later. Okay, so here's what I've got to say about Animosity. It is, without a doubt, my favorite project that's come from Marguerite Bennett to date. And you all know how much we've adored her work over the past several years. This book is wildly imaginative, and it's smart. Like, super smart. In fact, I would love to have, like, a fireside chat with Marguerite about her research structure for the series. While never coming off as preachy, at least for me, the story naturally educated me about how animals are essential to our survival and that the planet depends on their patterns and contributions to function. So when you kind of apply almost like a Walking Dead apocalyptic scenario, minus the zombies, to this whole thing, but because from the animal's perspective, you have to start asking yourselves all these different questions about the animal kingdom, and it gets wild. I am also totally into the animal drama, and by that I mean the wars happening between species throughout the series. Hearing animals speak about their hardships for me was heart-wrenching. You have animals talking about how their children were slaughtered, their homes were destroyed, they were victims of abuse, slavery, animal testing. It's all there, and it really makes you sick, and it really makes you think. Now, until The Wake happens in real life, though, I will continue to enjoy my tasty burger. I will be thinking twice about where it comes from. I can't believe I slept on this series for so long. It's intelligent, emotional, packed with action, and all around something so fresh and fun in an already oversaturated genre. It's also beautifully rendered by its contributing artists, Raphael de la Tour, Rob Schwager, Marshall Dillon, and Juan Doe, one of the best names in comics. Their characters are expressive, creatively presented, and there are endless amounts of fun to look at. Trust me, you have not lived until you've seen a deer launch hand grenades from its antlers.
No, I would
it's
say that.
It's fantastic. It walks around with hand grenades, like, hanging from strings from its antlers, and when he needs to use them, he just kind of cocks his head back and lobs them out, and the pins fly out and explode. It's so good. It's so freaking good. So Animosity Evolution, 1-7, written by Marguerite Bennett. This is ongoing as well. As far as I know, it's ongoing. I might be wrong about that. Art by Eric Gapster, I believe. To that same end, let's skip that part. Sorry. Just a spin-off series follows Jesse's brother Adam through his ordeal as one of the only veterinarians left on the planet. He falls in with a warmongering wolf named Wintermute, who rules a vast section of California with an iron paw. Together, Adam and Wintermute work tirelessly to keep society from crumbling, as members of both human and animal kind threaten to huff and puff and blow their regime in. It's more stunning writing from Ms. Bennett, with art by Eric Kapser, Rob Schwager, and Marshall Dillon. It adds to the story that exists in Animosity proper by introducing even more exciting and intriguing elements to Life After the Wake. The spin-off series also boasts a circus full of characters, so the cast for Animosity is practically doubled by the time you finish reading this. It's the sort of world-building strategy that has me chomping at the bit for an epic crossover event. I friggin' love it. I'm adding it to my pull list. Also, cats rule and dogs rule. So there you go. But yeah, real talk. It's absolutely amazing. It's so good. I had so much fun reading it. The stuff, the philosophizing that goes on in this book. You guys know that I love that stuff. And at one point, Marguerite writes this really beautiful passage about mayflies and how mayflies have the shortest lifespan of any animal that we know. They live for something like 35 seconds. But the whole thing about the wake is that depending on when the animals woke up and what age they were is kind of their level of maturity. So if a dog is like more than halfway into its lifespan, it wakes as, you know, like a full grown adult. So if you have something like a mayfly that only lives for 35 seconds and that's their lifespan, they never know anything other than the consciousness. They never know anything but the wake, and they live and they die within such a short period of time that their lifespans, because they're so compressed, almost go on infinitesimally, but they're only alive for 35 seconds. It's so crazy. I'm probably not doing that whole thing justice. You should just read it for yourself. You should buy it and check it out. But there's so much stuff that's like that. There's the whole third act revolves around bees and how valuable bees are to us as a people, and how they help the world function, and their pollination and all this stuff going on. And when you take them out, if you destroy them, there's nothing left to make the food. There's nothing left to you know, do stuff with the crops or whatever. And like, I've seen this stuff before, but for some reason when it was put like in such an entertaining manner, it hit me that much harder. And I walked away from this book. Bronwyn and I went walking yesterday, and like every animal that I came across, every single animal was like, man, I wonder if that animal could talk, what they were thinking.
They weren't liking you, I'm sure.
I want to know what the skunks around here say, because I have all kinds of things that I've thought up for them. I really want to do a webcomic where it's me versus the skunks. There's like seven of them in my neighborhood, and man, do they like to mess with me. They come out of the shadows. One of them dug a hole and came underneath our friggin' gate one night. I was sitting on our little deck thing or whatever, and I look up. I hear this little sneeze, and I look up, and he was no shit, like, maybe not even 10 feet from me, just chilling. Just like, hey, man, what's up? You know, I can spray if I want.
Make friends.
No way you can make it up and through the door without me turning around. So just letting you know I could do it.
Anyway. I'd love to talk to my dogs. I want to know what they're thinking. Like, I want to know what's going on. I don't think there's that much going on in there, though. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes, like, some of my dogs are intelligent. Others, not as much. Not as much.
They're all little individuals. They all have their moments.
Oh, some have more moments than
others. I don't
know about
animals getting voices, man. Some real nasty stuff would come out. And not to mention all the animals that are pissed off about the way they've been treated.
Oh.
Oh, no. My animals live like princes and princesses. They'd be like, yes, thank you. Like, one's laying on like a fur blanket right now, or full fur animal. But like, you know,
wait, until you go outside to go get them more kibble and the birds get you. There's a panel with seagulls where a seagull comes down and screams mine before devouring someone.
Seagulls so much. Working on a fishing boat for years, they are my like arch nemesis. I hate seagulls. Seagulls can die. Go away, seagulls.
There's this recurring thing with showing how the wake affected different animals. And so you get several pages of these scenarios where, like, there's an orca at SeaWorld that professes its love to its trainer. There's a polar bear that bites into a sea lion, and then he wakes mid-bite and is horrified at, like, what he is and what he does, and he can't cope. There's another one where, like, a bird is breaking up with her husband and leaving him with, like, the new baby chicks, and I'm like, whoa!
She gets real.
This is some heavy business going on. It's so good.
I'd say one of the things you were talking about, those passages, one of the highlights for me of almost anything that Marguerite Bennett does is there are those moments where it's either full page spread, two page, or there's a sequence where there's no dialogue, they're thoughts, and they're either Marguerite's, the characters, combination of both, that literally boil the book down and the character to their deepest essential. And it's holy moly. I'm doing a Captain Marvel thing. It's wow. This is those double page spreads in the last Batwoman, the two of them.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, and that's been across, whether it was A-Force, that was in the Bombshells runs, it is this special quality.
Are there any in insects?
Yes, because what we end up having is those swirls of commentary about where women were in the Victorian age, and here are two ladies who have short-circuited the process a little bit about moving forward. I don't want to spoil that book if no one's read it. But we have it's a Cronenbergian body horror / social commentary about a woman's role in society through the prism of the Victorian era. That, how's that for a pitch?
Put that on the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a.
That's awesome. Alrighty. Anyway. Buy all the Marguerite Bennett things.
Yes.
And really fantastic art, once again, by the whole team. All of the contributing artists were fantastic for Animosity. I cannot recommend it enough. Let's move on. Bob.
Yes?
Let's talk about Modern Fantasy number 3.
Right. Since we were discussing various games, this is something that's right in that sort of realm. It's Modern Fantasy number 3, written by Rafer Roberts, art by Kristen Gudsnuck. Here we pick up Sage of the Riverlands, and she has a plan to get her friends ready for their battle against a gigantic fire demon. But that plan's first step involved watching Janna of the Mountain Clan's battle aerobics videos, which climax in bloody dismemberment of the people in them. Well, let's just move on to step two. Now, there, she really starts to make some progress as her often antagonistic co-worker, Bakhtar the Mighty, he'll be joining their adventure, which is good to see. And they've scheduled a melee class at the Y, which, of course, as we mentioned before, is the YOWC. We'll wait to find out what that actually means. It's them doing their training montage. You got to have one of those in a book like this. We've got the Lizard Wizard cleansing his aura and going to this odd sort of confession. And things might just work out, including a couple of seems to be burgeoning romances.
Mm-hmm.
So what'd you think, Steve?
I'm flipping through the pages, and this made me crack the F up the first time, and I'm dying again. That
get well soon.
Panel where they're at the hospital,
yeah.
And you're in the room with the frog and the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
There's no easy way to say this, but you have lily paditis. And the frog goes, what? Really? He goes, ha, 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 no, that's not a real disease. You have herpes.
You're herpes.
And there's this, like, the next panel, and you can still see the frog in the room, and he's just, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I was dying.
Right.
I was dying.
The hospital sequence, on the next page, you see through into another room, there's a pan-like character who's got he's got a broken hoof.
Yep. And the orderly with the shotgun?
Yes.
Or what is he? He's working on like a bush with gnomes stuck in it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. There's another one. There's a skeleton in a wheelchair with a balloon that says,
soon. Yeah. There's just so much to recommend this book. It is adult in the sense that there are a couple of cuss words. So even though it looks to be very child friendly, you should be careful. But as someone who's just playing Dungeons and Dragons for the first time and getting into some of this sort of stuff, and it is lovely that every first page has their new levels. You know, where Sage is a level 3 data entry specialist. Skills, mission prep 1, history 14. So, you know, that could help. It could certainly help. It is funny. It is real, because these are real people. Yes, they're in a crazy world where there's a city floating above their city and they're fire demons and wizards. But these people have real crappy jobs that they have to do. And that her boss is actually a giant eyeball.
Yeah, Mr. Carpuscle.
Right. Big Brother is always watching, and he's just an eyeball. Just great stuff by Rafer Roberts and Kristen Gudsnow.
I love the Rat World t-shirt.
Yeah.
There's so many
little
things.
And the anime eyes.
There's so many little things in this book. Yeah, the anime eyes when they're, like, falling in love, and they're, like, getting ready, like, There's just so many, like, little details in this book that's what, you know. And then don't forget they're, like, sitting on the roof, like, smoking pot. Whatever that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're, like, you know. Like,
wizard eating a slice of pizza.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so good.
This is my kind of adult. Like, you know, it's like a kiddie adult book. Like, I want, you know, a few curse words mixed in with my cartoons. Like, that's kind of the way I like it. So, it kills me every time I read this book, every time I pick it up.
And how long is this? 5 issues?
5, I believe, yes. So only 2 more to go. But, yeah, who knows if they won't get some more Sage of the Riverlands somewhere down the road.
I hope so.
That would be amazing. Alrighty. Any more thoughts on Modern Fantasy?
It's great.
Yes, that sums it up.
It's great, man. Good job, all. Okay. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but does anybody have any other anything they'd like to share? Any other bits? Any other books?
Well, it's not a book, but tomorrow evening I will be recording with Melissa Megan and Jackie DeVore and Sierra Houck on the Sirens of Scream podcast, where we dive headfirst into the morass that is witch-haunted Arkham and the works of H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
Awesome.
What are you wearing to the occasion? Who are you wearing to the occasion?
I will certainly be wearing my Miskatonic University t-shirt, and I'll have my Necronomicon on the table in front of me.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you hand wrote this Necronomicon yourself.
Yes, I did. A letter at a time, with some of the things from Lovecraft's own work, one of which you read so forcefully as a bizarre preacher in our The Mind's Eye radio broadcast.
Yes.
All those times ago. That's actually from the Dunwich Horror. Never is it to be thought that man is the, yeah, that one. So yeah, I bought at a, Initially, I bought just a regular little book, and I was going to stain it with tea to make it look old. And I walked into a Barnes & Noble, and they had this little leather-bound sketchbook on sort of cream-colored, not regular edges paper. So I went, I'll just do that. So I got my pen out and sort of letter at a time, sort of writing backwards. It doesn't really look like my handwriting, and it took a long, long time to do it. My favorite part of it is at one point I drew some things where there are the signs. There's the elder sign and the sign of the yith and whatever, and this little hand signals kind of thing. So I drew one of them incorrectly on purpose and crossed it out and then drew it back in again and changed the wording of it. And then three pages from that, just as in a lot of Lovecraftian fiction where his narrators go mad and something terrible happens, and it's creeping up the stairways as I write. All of a sudden, the pen of the guy writing this copy of the Necronomicon slides across the page it's not letters anymore, and there's a big glop of red paint as blood on the page, and there's nothing else after it.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
That is
so
amazing.
It sits on. I had made a cabinet maker I knew when I was in the record store, who made me cabinets for my laser discs and a few other things. But he made me an old-fashioned standing bookcase with two glass doors, and in there it was one shelf of all my Algonquin Roundtable stuff. Includes actually a first edition of Robert Benchley signed by him in 1930 somewhere, and a whole bunch of shelves of Lovecraft stuff. The paperbacks and my hardbacks, and there's an autograph piece in there from August Derleth. And on top of it, the bigger books that don't fit there, and a Cthulhu Funko from Steve. I've got a statue I bought at Icon. I have a couple of crocheted ones, little fellas, and one big, huge green one that always looks like he's after me. His eyes always seem to follow me in the room.
I mean, is it really a good Cthulhu statue?
Yes, it is.
If it doesn't look like it's coming to get you.
The statue was the guy who did it at Icon. I bought it on a Sunday, figuring I could get a better deal. So it was a $100 statue I bought for $50. And it's on a base of skulls about 2 inches high. And it's the statue that's actually in the story, The Call of Cthulhu. So that's really replicated now. Also, just above that, as we're going down this road, some years back when they were still doing Icon over at Stony Brook, Jeffrey Coombs, Herbert West reanimator, was going to be there. And the regular guests at Icon, they would sign anything. There was no charge to sign anything. If you went to buy a picture for them to sign, that was great. But if you brought them something, they would sign it. So I had this plan years and years ago. There was the Call of Cthulhu role-playing games. And I didn't do any of that. But what they did have, they actually printed out for use by the gamers the Miskatonic University graduate kit. And it comes with library passes and bumper stickers and all sorts of crazy things. But it also came with a pad of stationery from Miskatonic University, Richard Upton Pickman Hall. Richard Upton Pickman was a character from a famous Lovecraft story called Pickman's Model. He was an artist. So here's this drawing of a little college with Miskatonic University and just a blank sheet of paper. I walk up to Jeffrey Coombs' table, and there's his assistant. And I said, look, I want to buy a picture, but I don't want to have him sign it. And she said, why not? Well, because I'd like him to sign this piece of paper. And I'm going to mount the photo in a frame and have a mat cut and have this put underneath it with his signature on it. And as I got up to him, he was, where did you get that? That's just amazing. So he signed it and signed it Herbert West as well. And it sits, there's the shot from the movie where the guy with no head is standing behind him about to bash his skull in. Mm. And so right underneath is this little thing with his signature on it. And just where it was finishing up, he said, by the way, can I have a couple of sheets of this? Because I have to have copies of this made because I'm going to sell the crap out of this.
My goodness. So I have a perfect way to close out this show.
Which,
by the way, thank you, Bob. I'm looking forward to hearing your Cthulhu Fest over at Sirens of Scream.
And if people are interested, our radio play is still up on our website somewhere.
And what should they search for? What's the name?
The Mind's Eye.
There you go. All right, so breaking news. Breaking news, everybody. What? Are you sitting down?
What is Joey doing now?
No. Is there a new one-man show?
No, Solomon Grundy, Born on a Monday, has already been optioned for film.
Oh, animated or live action?
Both.
Wow.
It's going to be live action with animated characters. Wow.
I love it.
The only animated character is going to be Joey. Everybody else is going to be live action.
He is super animated. There's no question.
So, Brie Larson, a.k.a. Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel, just tweeted not too long ago at 9:21 p.m. on this Tuesday night, "Hey, EW, Entertainment Weekly, I'm bored. Want to break the internet tomorrow?" And Entertainment Weekly responded, "Yes, meet us here at noon Eastern. We've got something marvelous in mind." Holy shit! Are we getting a trailer?
I think that has to be what I mean.
Doesn't have to be a
teaser. Could be a teaser.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be a teaser. I don't know that it's going to be a full-fledged trailer, but we're getting something.
I'll be okay with a teaser, but I really like a trailer.
Yeah, but you know they're gonna tease the living daylights out of this before. Or they're gonna do the Shazam thing where they call it a teaser, but I mean that was a trailer.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous calling that a teaser. Sorry, I'm with you, Steve. It makes me very angry.
Yeah, I had to reword my whole article during that whole thing. So something's going down. Maybe not by the time that you hear this podcast. I don't know. Some of you are real, real early in the morning.
Yeah. Some people are Johnny on the spot with that. Like,
have you been around for like when we get like messages back in the day? We get messages from people being like, 5 o'clock in the morning and I don't have my podcast. I need to go to work. Oh. What's the deal?
No, I haven't had that, but I've had people tweet me very early in the morning about something, and I'm like, I am not awake yet. I will answer you later.
Listen, friends, 7 a.m. is a mighty fine time for a podcast to go live.
Yes, it is. But you know, remember, since we have so many international listeners.
Yeah.
They're tweeting us or emailing us at 5, and for them it's noon.
I mean, let's be honest, half the time it's Sarah. Half the time it's Sarah sending me a message.
All right.
Where's 5?
No, I'm just going to put it out raw. No edits, no song, no nothing. It's just going to be a raw podcast. I'm going to put it up right after we're done.
That'd be interesting.
See what happens.
Talking Comics Unplugged.
Yeah.
I wish we had like an acoustic version of the song, you know.
we did try once on a night where Bobby was absent. We, the three of us, being Stephanie, Steve, and I, did a scat version of the song.
Yep.
He was not happy, needless to say.
No, he really wasn't. No.
It was hysterical.
And that rubbed him the wrong way, in like not even like a joking way. No. He was like actually genuinely kind of hysterical.
I mean, it was silly, but that's what made it special.
Well, we were all very silly.
Yes.
It's what he signed on for.
Amen.
Silliness.
Amen. All right. So.
What are we
looking
forward
to next week?
You beat me to it.
Jinx.
You owe me a beer.
If I could find the damn thing. Here we go. La, la, la. All right, so I am going to let Jessica go first.
I want to pull out my notes. I have my, note. You know, I use my notes on my phone to, write down my list and send them to the boys. I have.
All right, well, we can wait.
I'm already there. I'm there.
All right.
Bully Wars number 1, Outpost 0 number 3. Unnatural number 3, which I'm still on the fence about this book.
Did you read number 2?
I did. I'm just on the fence about it. I don't know. I'm not going to talk about it yet. We'll keep it. I'm going to read number 3 and see how it goes.
That's what we said about the first
issue.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the way.
We'll wait for the next one.
We'll see. I don't know. I have feelings. I'm not ready to release those feelings yet. As Guardians of the Galaxy comes out tomorrow. Deadpool number 4 comes out tomorrow. Domino number 6 is on my list.
I didn't know that was coming.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
The Nightmare Before Christmas Zero's Journey number 2 comes out tomorrow. See,
Kid
things makes me so excited. And then there's some other rando things. I have no idea what they were.
I am surprised that you are not naming Bully Wars number
one.
You
said that. That was the first one I said.
Did I not hear you?
That was the first one I said.
Yes.
But it's okay. I am getting that. That is on my list. It was sent over in my notes to my lovely friend Chris at the comic book store. Chris normally pulls my list. So thanks, Chris.
I think every now and again my feed cuts out when somebody's microphone kicks back in.
Maybe.
Maybe, or maybe I'm just that horrible.
Maybe I'm not speaking. I could totally be like missing it. And maybe I thought I read it. It's not.
I'm pretty sure Bob heard it. It's all my fault.
Oh, okay. It's your
fault. All right.
Never mind.
What are you looking for, Jeff? Let's move on.
Bob, what are you getting?
Paper Girls, 24. Giant Days, 42. Both this week. We have As Guardians, of course, I want to see. Ant-Man and the Wasp, number 5, which I do believe is the finale of that fun series. And isn't Batman out this week?
Yep.
Yeah, but I thought that was just a given.
Okay.
I thought it was just a given that it's going to be in my bag. I didn't think that was a
fact. Fill me, what is As Guardians of the Galaxy? I saw it on the list, but why are you both excited for this book?
Well, it is, let me pull up the, I'll give you the official announcement, so to speak, because we want to do this right instead of me just mouthing off about
the official solicitation.
Yes, we have Angela, we've got the Valkyrie,
yeah,
and the Brunhilde version.
Okay,
so we have and we have Angela, Valkyrie, Thunderstrike, Frog Thor.
Oh, right. You had me at Frog Thor.
Right. Scourge the Executioner and the Destroyer, meaning the giant armored monster robot thing.
I'm in.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in. That's a cool cast.
Yeah, let me tell you who's doing it. Let's see.
The cover looks really cool. It looks really cool. I think, do they have a preview of it? I feel like I read a preview of it.
It is written, of course, by who else? Cullen Bunn. Art by Matteo Lolli. Lots of covers. There's a Scotty Young Baby cover, a Umberto Ramos variant, a Cliff Chang variant. The regular is Dale Keown, and they all look amazing.
Yeah. Looks good.
Okay.
So it may not be the Fearless Defenders, but it's as close as we're going to get.
No, I'm sold. Okay. Awesome. I am also looking forward to that then. Anything else, Bob?
Nope. Light week.
All right. On my list, I have As Guardians of the Galaxy number
42. You do now.
Giant Days number 42, Batman 54. I might try cover number one. I didn't realize there were going to be so many series in this Jinx World thing going on. I was like, oh, maybe I can get into this, but this is a little bit, it's getting a little expensive. So I don't know. We'll see. Dreaming number one of the Sandman spinoffs. I did pick up Sandman number one at the behest of Melissa. I've not read it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. The cover for Dreaming was enough to get my attention.
Who did the cover?
Domino. Oh, I don't know who drew it, but it's absolutely gorgeous. It looks a little bit like Jai Lee,
okay,
but I'm probably way off. So I was Dreaming number one, Domino number 6, which I didn't know about until you said it just before. Outpost Zero number 3, Paper Girls number 24, Unnatural number 3. I'm also going to pick up. Have not read issue 2 yet.
You'll have feelings, and you'll do the same thing. Like, I have feelings. I'm gonna read them over.
Yeah, we'll eventually talk about that book. I think Captain America number 3. I will pick up. Cosmic Ghost Rider, yo.
Oh.
Wow. Cosmic Ghost Rider is so good. I am totally picking that up. And Deadpool number 4. Monstrous Volume 3 also hits the stands tomorrow, if that's your jam.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, if nobody has anything else to say, I will read the stuff.
Read that stuff.
Read that stuff.
Read all that stuff.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Comics Podcast. As always, you could send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter, @talkingcomics. Don't forget to check out TalkingComicBooks.com for news, reviews, and articles about comics and video games, TV shows, and much more. We have podcasts of every flavor, including Talking Games, Valiant, Adventure, and Ladies of Valhalla. Bob. Where can our listeners find
you? I can't match that energy. Bob Ryer at TalkingComicBooks.com, or hiding under some stones hoping that Cthulhu doesn't get me.
And Jessica, how about you?
Okay, Steve. You can find me at Jessica for all the things. Even on WoW. If you ever want a shitty pally, what? I'm good. Invite me to your raid group. I'll play with you.
She's a valuable member of any team. I have played Overwatch with Jess, and she always beats me. Even though we're on the same team.
How does that work?
Trust me, somehow it works out. And always in Jess's favor. I don't know why you'd want to follow me, but if you want to do that, it's dead_anchorus on Twitter and Instagram. So, for Bob...
Fresher parts, says Herbert West.
Jessica.
Have a lovely evening.
And I have been Steve. Thank you very much for joining us on this here podcast. Be excellent to each other. Loan somebody a comic book. And, you know, just be a good person. Be a good person. Do nice things. Hug people. Tell them you love them. Put something positive out into the world. And until next time... Thanks for all the fish.